The afternoon session, our first presentation is from Allison Smith, Dalhousie University. Eelgrass Habitat Functions and Ecosystem Services, and because this is 2009, this is kind of a really cool presentation. Allison, unfortunately, due to the weather, could not make it here, but her talk did with a voiceover. So you will hear Allison give her PowerPoint.
Cool.
There'll be no questions at the end, though.
Can't you see it, too?
I could, but...
Good afternoon, and thank you all for coming. And I'm sorry that I couldn't be there to deliver this talk to you personally. So what I'm going to focus on today covers three topics. The first is habitat structure, more specifically the shoot density, canopy height, and eelgrass biomass. The second topic covers what are deemed regulating services of ecosystems, and in this case, the carbon and nitrogen storage capacity of eelgrass beds. And finally, the supporting services of eelgrass beds. How are these being used by adults and juveniles of mobile fish and invertebrate species? I will cover all three topics on two different spatial scales in three different contexts. The first is looking at seasonal variation locally along the Atlantic coast of Nova Scotia. Secondly, looking at changes in the structure and services along a gradient of eutrophication. And lastly, making a regional comparison between the open Atlantic coast and the more sheltered Gulf of St. Lawrence. We use the same methods of collection at all sites. We use a transect placed inside the eelgrass bed to conduct a visual census of the highly mobile fauna. Quadrats placed along the transect were used for the slower moving and cryptic fauna and canopy structure measures. And we also used core samples to determine biomass, as well as collect tissue samples for CN analysis. First, we will examine the structure and services seasonally. The samples were collected at four sites on the Atlantic coast of Nova Scotia in the spring, summer, and fall. What we found is that shoot density peaks in the summer, while canopy height peaks in the fall. However, total biomass is highest in the spring. The above-ground biomass is stable throughout the seasons, with the decline in biomass being driven by the decline in the below-ground component. The percentage of carbon in eelgrass tissue shows a slight decline in the fall. The nitrogen content is highly variable in the spring and shows the predicted seasonal trends of water column nutrients, abundance in the spring and fall, and limitation in the summer. Both carbon and nitrogen storage closely mimic the patterns in biomass, with a more pronounced seasonal decline in nitrogen storage due to the combined seasonality of the biomass and tissue nitrogen. In both cases, the below-ground biomass contains more than the above-ground, especially with respect to nitrogen storage. Moving on to the supporting services, we can see that there's a slight decline in the mobile species richness, but that on average, there are approximately 10 species at any one time. I know this figure seems a bit overwhelming, but let's take it one step at a time. The first column of graphs represents abundance data collected from the transects, so all the highly mobile fish and invertebrates. The second column represents the more cryptic mobile fauna collected using the quadrats. The top row represents the adult abundance, and the bottom row is the juvenile abundance. And here is where the colors and legends come in. Don't concern yourself trying to decipher the colors, just know that each color is a different species, and that the legend is associated with the columns. There is no overlap of species between the transects and quadrats. Now, when we take a look at the patterns, we can immediately see the seasonality in both the adult and juvenile abundance and species richness. There is a greater juvenile richness and abundance when compared to adults in the spring, which is mainly driven by the lion's mane jelly, seen in the dark blue. Whereas the abundance in the summer and the fall is similar between adults and juveniles, but that juvenile species richness is greater in the summer, and for adults, it's greatest in the fall. We also see a higher number of species in the spring in both the adults and juveniles of the more cryptic species, but that their abundance is similar between adults and juveniles, as well as over seasons. Now to summarize the local seasonal patterns. Although shoot density and canopy height peaked in the summer and fall respectively, biomass declined over time, which was mimicked by carbon storage and was exacerbated in nitrogen storage due to the seasonality of nitrogen tissue content. The peaks in highly mobile adult and juvenile abundances were in the spring and fall, and the lowest values were in the summer. The highest species richness of both adults and juveniles of highly mobile species was in the summer, whereas for more cryptic fauna, the peak was in the spring. However, there were no differences in cryptic fauna abundance between life stages or seasons. To look at changes in structure and services along the eutrophication gradient, we sampled 12 sites within 4 blocks, and each block had sites with low, medium, and high nutrient loading. These were all sampled once in July and August in 2007. What we found was a significant decline in shoot density with a concurrent increase in canopy height with increasing eutrophication. Biomass also declined with increasing eutrophication. Interestingly, the biomass of the below ground tissue dropped significantly between the low and medium with no change in the above ground biomass. However, above ground then declined between the medium and the high. Percent tissue carbon remained constant along the gradient. And as expected, there was a significant increase in tissue nitrogen. Because there was no variation in tissue carbon content, the pattern in carbon storage is identical to biomass. Nitrogen storage declines with increasing eutrophication despite the increased tissue nitrogen. Most of the nitrogen is being stored in the above ground biomass, and the decline between the low and the high is a function of the decline in both components. We also observed a decline in overall mobile species richness between low and medium and high. How does this break down? What we can see is that the highest richness and abundance of highly mobile adult fauna are in the sites with low nutrient loading, whereas the richness of juveniles is constant across the gradient with increases in abundance from low to high, mainly being driven by one species, the Atlantic silverside. For the more cryptic species, the higher adult abundances in both the medium and high sites is driven by an increase in the abundance of mud crabs. The juveniles undergo a significant decline in abundance across the gradient, as well as an interesting shift in the species dominance from the four-spined stickleback in the low to the mixed with mummy chugs in the mid and the dominance of mummy chugs in the high. So now to summarize our local gradient findings. There was a significant decline in shoot density and increase in canopy height. There was a decline in total biomass, which was driven mainly by the declines in the below ground component. There was also an overall decline in mobile species richness. The highest richness and abundance of highly mobile adult fauna was in the low sites, and the highly mobile juvenile richness was constant, and the increasing abundance was driven by the Atlantic silverside. Cryptic adult richness was constant, and increasing abundance was driven by the mud crab. Cryptic juvenile abundance was highest in the low sites, the dominance shifts from the four-spined stickleback to the mummy chug from low to high sites. The last comparison is between sites with low nutrient loading on the open Atlantic coast of Nova Scotia and the more sheltered Gulf of St. Lawrence. What we found was that shoot density was significantly lower in the Atlantic, whereas canopy height is much greater. Most significant is the order of magnitude difference in the biomass, with a greater proportion of below ground in the Atlantic and an equal allocation in the Gulf of St. Lawrence. The amount of carbon in the eelgrass tissue varied quite a bit in the Gulf of St. Lawrence, but was overall higher in the Atlantic. The same was seen for nitrogen content, albeit with a less variability. Not surprisingly, from the biomass and tissue data, Atlantic eelgrass beds have greater carbon and nitrogen storage capacity. Both carbon and especially nitrogen storage are greater in the above ground compartment, but this is most obvious in the Atlantic site. Overall, mobile species richness was greater in the Gulf than it was in the Atlantic. For the highly mobile species, what we can see is that in the Atlantic, juvenile abundance is greater than adult abundance, and the reverse is true for the Gulf, and that for both adult and juveniles, their abundances in the Gulf are greater, which is driven by the three-spined stickleback and Atlantic silverside, respectively. However, juvenile richness is greater in the Atlantic, and adult richness is greater in the Gulf. For the more cryptic species, adult abundance and richness was greater in the Gulf, whereas juvenile abundance was greater in the Atlantic, and richness is equal across regions, both having only one species. Now to summarize our regional findings. In the Atlantic, we saw that shoot density was lower and canopy height was greater. There was also an order of magnitude greater biomass, and the tissue carbon and nitrogen content were also greater, leading to both higher carbon and nitrogen storage, which was mostly in the above ground tissue. Overall, mobile species richness was greater in the Gulf, and the abundance and richness of highly mobile and cryptic adult fauna was also greater in the Gulf. However, the highly mobile juvenile richness was greater in the Atlantic and equal across regions for cryptic fauna. And now for some conclusions. The seasonal declines in biomass were mainly driven by the below ground compartment, which may represent changes in allocation with changing nutrient availability. The significant decline in shoot density and total biomass, and the concurrent increase in canopy height along a gradient of eutrophication is consistent with previous studies, and is likely due to a combination of light limitation, anoxia, and increased water column nutrient availability. Increased nutrient loading significantly affects the ability of eelgrass beds in the Gulf to act as coastal filters. However, the sixfold greater carbon and fourfold greater nitrogen storage capacity of the Atlantic eelgrass beds and currently low impacted state makes them a significant coastal filter. Seasonal patterns in habitat usage by adult and juvenile life stages of mobile fauna are not clearly linked to changes in habitat structure. The significant declines in overall species richness and decreased abundance and richness of both adult and juvenile life stages of the highly mobile species can be linked to increasing eutrophication. The increased abundance of adult and juvenile cryptic species as eutrophication increased was driven by a detritivore, the mud crab, and the mummy chug, a species known to tolerate low oxygen and poor water quality. The Gulf of St. Lawrence is a more diverse system with respect to mobile fauna. However, Atlantic eelgrass beds house a more diverse juvenile assemblage, indicating that both regions play an important role in maintaining the abundance and diversity of mobile fishes and invertebrates. Finally, I would like to thank my field support team, funding agencies, and everyone who helped make this project possible, from hosts to site locations. Most of all, I would like to thank you for your patience. If you have any questions, my email address is at the bottom of this slide, and please feel free to drop me a note. Thank you again. Have a good day.